Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, September 13th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today. Thank you very much for joining us. When I head on in over to the chat room and say hello to everybody as they slowly but surely trickle in over there. Glad to see you guys in the chat room. Want to send a shout out to all the over-the-road truck drivers, the homeschoolers, the folks in the chat room, folks listening to the archive, and, of course, all of the feed and seed stores across the country that listen live every day and stream this for their customers. We thank you very much for doing so. We appreciate it and hope your business is thriving. So today is, of course, Thursday, which can mean only one thing. Tomorrow is Fun Friday. Lots of stuff going on. We got a great show topic today, first off, so go ahead and get those Chicken Whisperer spiral notebooks out and get that pen, get ready to take some notes. We've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. He'll be joining us shortly, and today's topic is preserving apples using old-timey techniques. So very, very cool there. And really looking forward to today's show with Richard Frudenberger, again, publisher of Back Home Magazine. So we got that going on today. Right now, it looks like tomorrow is Fun Friday. I do anticipate, at least right now, having Fun Friday radio show here tomorrow at noon. It may not be a very long one because I've got to get packed up and head up to Hotlanta. Got to head up there tomorrow afternoon. We've already made our travel plans, our reservations up there, because yours truly has been invited to Atlanta to be in a parade. It is called the East Cobbler Parade and Festival, and the parade starts at 10. It's from 10 to 11. The festival's from 11 to 3, and it happens to be in Cobb County, which is a major suburb of Atlanta. I think there's about 750,000 people that live in Cobb County, just down the outskirts of Atlanta, major metropolitan area. And you have to have 2 acres to keep chickens. And so it's and even then, I think it's just one chicken if you have 2 acres or something like that. It's just really horrible. And there's a group, Cobb County Backyard Chickens Alliance has invited me up there. They've got a float in the parade, and they would like for me to be their guest of honor and ride in the float and wave to folks as the Chicken Whisperer. They've got some Chicken Whisperer banners made for the float and whatnot, and a lot of people, probably about 50 people, I think, right now have RSVP'd that are going to be attending to walk behind the banner. And the Backyard Chicken Alliance of Cobb County, they're going to be pulling wagons with their chickens, holding their chickens. We're going to be throwing out, I think they've got literally, no joke, 60 pounds of candy. 60 pounds of candy to actually hand out and throw out. And so, and then tons of chickens are going to be there. They're going to have a mobile coop on wheels that they'll be pulling behind the float. Giving handouts, holding signs, and I'll just be doing my typical Chicken Whisperer dance up there in the float and waving to everybody. So as far as I know, unless something changes and I need to be up there earlier, I do anticipate having the Fun Friday radio show tomorrow right here, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. So if for some reason we need to get out of Dodge early, then I will let you know that there won't be a show. But right now, I anticipate doing the show as soon as it's over. It may not be very long, maybe just an hour show tomorrow. And then we're going to be hitting the road up to Atlanta to be in the parade on Saturday. But we're coming back Saturday after all the event. There's no need to stay up there longer than we need to. So Saturday around 3, we'll be heading back to the homestead. Lots of stuff to do around here over the weekend. So that's kind of the game plan. So hopefully we'll see you tomorrow here, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we've got that going on. I apologize about no show yesterday. I was preparing for my very important meeting with Tractor Supply. It went very, very well. You know, Tractor Supply is a huge company, 1,200 stores nationwide or somewhere around that number, and they don't play around, and their time is valuable. And so I'm sure by now they would have told me to hit the road if they weren't interested. So we had a great successful meeting yesterday. And, you know, I already work with Tractor Supply, and I have for years. We've made five instructional videos with them, informational videos, and we're looking to make eight more by the end of the year so they can have on their website for 2013 Chick Days. And so we've got that going on, but this will be a totally different agreement slash contract with them, and it'll be a big major deal. And so we're really looking forward to that. We shared a lot of ideas yesterday about what we'd like to do together as far as spreading the poultry love, power to the poultry, mind you, and some really great ideas. And so I've got to put together kind of a final proposal, which will really outline all the specifics of what will be included in the contract for the moolah that they'll be forking out. So, but it's all about, you know, again, it's spreading that poultry love. We're talking webinars, which would be great educational webinars, maybe some chat rooms with Q&A, continuing and maybe even increasing the Chicken Whisperer tours that we do all across the country every quarter. So really looking forward to that, and hoping that'll work out with TSC and Tractor Supply. So the next visit, the next little issue will be submitting that proposal, that final proposal, and then going up and to their headquarters in Brentwood, just outside of Nashville, and finalizing everything and inking the documents, and that'll be a great day. So we're really looking forward to that regarding what's going on there. Next week looks like we've got some great guests coming on. Of course, this Monday, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Tuesday, we've got Tiny Revolution, Andrew Odom. Wednesday, it's another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Thursday, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD poultry scientist. And then another fun Friday, next Friday, the 21st of September. So, guys, September is flying by. Can't believe it. Can't believe it. So, great topics and great guests all next week. Andreas, hello. He's in the chat room all the way from Norway. We appreciate you from joining us live, listening live over there across the pond in Norway. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining us. Very cool. Okay, I do have a very special announcement. Many of you who follow me on Facebook received this announcement yesterday evening. Many of you who follow me on Facebook may not have seen it based on when you signed on and looked at your timeline. But I really wanted to make a very special announcement, and it was completely my mistake, and I completely overlooked it, and I just want to apologize to everybody from the bottom of my heart. But the special announcement basically is that I had posted earlier, my mistake, I posted earlier that I was going to give away another chicken coop in October. And I jumped the gun a little bit, so I'm sorry, but that information is wrong. And I want to apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused you because I was misinformed. We are not giving away a chicken coop in October. The post should have actually read that I'm giving away two chicken coops in October. Gotcha. Yep, how unprecedented is that? How cool is that? Absolutely amazing. We are giving away not one. See, I told you. I was wrong. We're not giving away one chicken coop in October. Nope, not doing it. We are giving away two chicken coops in October. Is that? I mean, it's amazing enough that our sponsors are so awesome that we get to give away a chicken coop just about every month. You know, nobody does that. Nobody on the planet. But then to have a special circumstance where we can give away two chicken coops in October, my goodness gracious! I mean, you would, if you didn't know better, you'd think it was Christmas. Bye. There we go. Alrighty, had a little technical difficulties there. So, yeah, if you didn't know any better, you would think it was Christmas. How cool is that? is the world going to end? It's too good to be true. Count them, two coops. Oh, my goodness gracious. So, Tammy said, my son just pointed out that Andy's show is kind of like listening to Jen Kramer on CNBC, but for chickens. Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. I never really thought about that. I don't own a TV, but I do know who you're talking about because we do travel a lot, and when we're in the hotel room, we'll turn that old sheeple box on and see what's going on in the world a little bit, but I never really thought about that. How cool is that? Yeah, got the little soundboard here with all kinds of crazy, crazy sounds, so a little bit like Jim Cramer, huh?
Congratulations.
Congratulations, your stock's gone up 10% in the last 6 months. How about that? So, oh, gotta love it. Oh, me. So, yeah, that is exciting news. I have not, let me repeat, I have not gone through the details yet for two contests. They're going to be two separate contests. And we've given a coupe away the last 3 months in a row. This will be the fourth month in a row that we've given away a chicken coop, but this month, in October, two coops. Yep. So there'll be two. They will be two different contests. Okay. And you'll have to enter them both. But I think, realistically, I think because it aggravates so many people, and I can. Okay. Ready for the moans and groans? Are you ready for the moans and groans? I think one of them is going to be a password collection for poultry protection contest. Yeah, some people love that and some people hate it, but it's good because everybody can participate. And so people who are fans on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, listen to the show live, listen to the show archive, whatever, everybody can participate because we actually every day on the radio show, we will announce a password, a secret password. And so you have to get the password. But if you can't listen to the show live or archive, it's okay because we also post them on Facebook and Twitter daily. So the passwords are only given during the week, Monday through Friday, and it'll be for the whole month of October. This contest is going to start, or both contests, got to get used to saying that now, will start on October 1st, and they'll end on 31st, Halloween. And we will actually give away the coop on Halloween, both of them on Halloween. In fact, Derek with My Pet Chicken, mypetchicken.com, who Derek and Tracy, awesome, awesome folks, awesome place, mypetchicken.com. They've donated a coop. He's going to be joining us, I think, on Halloween when we give away his coop. Also, we're giving away a Snap Lock chicken coops, which you can buy this at My Pet Chicken too. They carry both coops. So Snap Lock chicken coops with an S, snaplockchickencoops.com. They may be joining us too on Halloween when we give away the coop. So I know at least one of the chicken coops contests are actually going to be a password collection for poultry protection, okay? I haven't figured out or come up with the second contest for the second coop in October, but we'll think of something. So very, very exciting news, and we'll have two chicken coops to give away in October. Just a little public service reminder here, folks. I try to do this every year around this time. We just have a we normally have a public service announcements. Let me see what I've got here that we normally do. Oh, here, this will be a good one. This is a reminder to all the parents out there, okay? This is a public service announcement. You know, we have to do this occasionally since it's radio. But the public service announcement for all the parents. So parents, listen up. Listen up, parents. Let me have your attention, okay? This is just a public service reminder, okay? This is a public service reminder. I would like, as the Chicken Whisperer, to remind you that Halloween is not dress like a hooker day. Okay, that's the message I want to get across. Okay, so for all of you that have children, young children, teenagers, early teens, whatever the case may be, maybe you're heading out to a Halloween party. I just want to make sure you realize this is a public service announcement from the Chicken Whisperer. Okay, because it is coming up here shortly. Halloween is not, I repeat, Halloween is not dress like a hooker day. It never has been turned into that. It is Halloween. I just want to make sure you realize that when you're out picking costumes for your children, okay, if you actually participate with that. So that has been your public service announcement from the Chicken Whisperer here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. All righty. And when did it turn into that? Absolutely crazy. My goodness. Yes, and so... let's see, we've got Jessica says, oh no, I can't dress like the Housewives of New Jersey for Halloween. Nope, you cannot. And you know, our Jersey Shore, our Honey Boo Boo, or any of that, okay? Oh my goodness. So that has been your public service announcement for today. All righty. Let me think what else is going on. Craziness here. This coming up November, I will be a guest speaker at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. Let me tell you, if you can dig deep in your pockets and attend that, then you will not regret it. It's the speakers. I'm just so proud and honored to be and associated with some of the guest speakers that are going to be there this year. Absolutely amazing. And it is a little, I'll say, hey, if you can go, great. A little pricey in this day, in this economy, sure, I think it's a little pricey, but, you know, it's worth it. I mean, you're getting what you're paying for in this particular situation. You can get all the information. You can see when and where they're going to be speaking. It's in Cary, North Carolina, just outside of Raleigh. If you own a homestead, if you own a little farm, urban homestead, whatever the case may be, animals interested in heritage breed animals and things like that, then this thing is awesome. It's worth saving your money for, worth the drive. If you can attend, that's great. Let me tell you how you can get some information. Just go to the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy website, www.albc-usa.org. www.albc-usa.org. And you can get all kinds of information. You can make your hotel reservations. You can sign up for the classes that are going to be there, the whole nine yards. And if you're planning on going, I know you'll see me there. You'll be able to meet me there and whatnot. But let me tell you, since you know I'm straightforward with everybody, whether it be you know buying stuff from our sponsors. Hey, if you need something, check them out. But don't just go buy something because you heard them on the radio show. Okay, if you need to buy something anyway. Well, of course, we ask you to check our sponsors out because they may have a much better deal, especially using our coupon codes and things like that. But same thing here. I'm going to tell you because I want you to save your money and get most bang for your buck. Bottom line, if you have kept chickens longer than about 2 to 3 years, you do not need to sign up for my specific conference. Okay, go to another one and get that, you know, whatever it is, $50, $60, $70 worth for that conference instead of my whatever hour, two-hour presentation. Especially if you've kept chickens less than 2 to 3 years, come on. You'll probably learn something very very informative, very educational, without a doubt. But if you've kept chickens longer than, say, 2 or 3 years and you're going to attend the ALBC conference, just go ahead. And I know I'll hate it. I will see you there in the hallway or on the grounds or at lunch or whatever the case may be. We can talk. I'll autograph my book, the whole nine yards. That's all great. But I don't want you to spend the money to come hear my Getting Started with Backyard Chickens. That's exactly what it's about, Getting Started with Backyard Chickens. There's a lot of new towns around Raleigh that have now allowed backyard chickens and are in the process of allowing backyard chickens, so we anticipate a good crowd for Getting Started with Backyard Chickens. But again, if you've kept chickens more than 2 or 3 years, utilize that money more importantly. And I'm trying to follow the chat room here. Jessica saying, now I get to learn different languages. CW, this chat room is the greatest. I'm guessing because maybe Andreas is doing something. Let me see.
Maybe so. Oh, there you go. I see what it is. Gotcha. Learning some many words is the same in Dutch and Norse. So anyway, great. You can learn everything in the chat room. How cool is that? So just again, you know, I'm honest with you. Save your money. I know it may hurt your feelings a little bit, but just when you're going down to sign up for classes at the ALBC annual conference, if you've kept chickens more than 2 or 3 years, just skip mine and get something that'll be worth your money. If it's less than 2 to 3 years, come on, sign up. You'll learn. You'll get your money's worth. But and you'll see me there. We can chat at lunch. I heard there's going to be amazing, wonderful heritage food there. It's going to be absolute from heritage chef Steve Pope and others. So it's going to be a fabulous, fabulous event. I'm really looking forward to it. Now, here's the other thing. I'm using that event as a kickoff, I hope. I'm using that event kind of as a kickoff. I'm hoping in my mind that the ink will be dry and everything will be situated with Tractor Supply by then, and we may be using that event to act, because Tractor Supply works a lot with ALBC, to actually kick off a little tour, maybe a 7-day tour, and we'll kick that off there at the ALBC conference. I couldn't tell you where I'm going. Couldn't even tell you. If this thing works out with a Tractor Supply, then I'll try to get an idea of where we can go in that 7 days, which will, you know, basically be the best for backyard poultry, where we can hit, if we can hit some Tractor Supply stores, maybe do a few workshops at some of the Tractor Supply stores, maybe do book signings, meet and greet, whatever. We'll definitely look forward to that. So that's what my game plan is, to try to take about 7 days, 7 to 10 days, kick it off there at the ALBC conference and hit the road. That's what we're looking out for. So glad you tuned in today. We've got a great show with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. If you're just tuning in, our topic today is preserving apples using old-timey techniques. That'll be today's show. And if also you're just tuning in, real quick, if you missed it, I need to apologize. I had made an announcement earlier that we were giving away a chicken coop in October, and I was completely wrong. I apologize if it may have upset you or caused any kind of an issue, but I was wrong. The post should have actually said, I'm giving away 2 chicken coops in October. How cool is that? So if you missed that, I'll go over that again tomorrow for our Fun Friday and, of course, on Facebook. And then you won't have to enter or worry about entering or any of that until October 1st. So we've got a couple of weeks here for me to get all the ducks in a row and get that stuff done for the contest. So how cool is that? Not one, but 2 chicken coops we're giving away thanks to our great sponsors in October. Totally unprecedented. That'll be our 4th month in a row giving away a chicken coop, and we're celebrating it by giving away 2. Awesome, awesome. All right, we're going to go to short commercial break here. When we come back, we've got Richard Frudenberger on the line, publisher of Back Home Magazine, talking about preserving apples using old-timey techniques. Get that pen and paper out, folks, to take some notes. We'll be back right after this short break.
Treats for chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics, non-toxic bug relief, treats, organic snacks, and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com. Snap-lock chicken coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to go over to the phone lines and bring on our good friend, Richard Vredenburger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Richard, thank you so much for joining us again today.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. I all fed it up on old-timey apples and preservation.
Gotta love it. Just by the way, I saw your post on the Facebook page the other day about the upcoming Green Conference, and so I went ahead and posted that as well. Took the information and the link and posted that over on our Facebook page. I believe you're going to be there. That's in Asheville, North Carolina. And let me here scroll down here to there it is. It's the Southern Green Living Expo, which I believe is going to be in Asheville, and that's coming up actually this weekend. Correct?
Yeah, yeah. We're packing out this afternoon right after here after this talk here. We're going to finish loading and drive up there, and we're just a few minutes away really, and start setting up the booth. And we've got it's a really big event. It's a regional event in the Civic Center, or the U.S. Cellular Center as they call it now, is pretty large, and they apparently have pulled in a lot of vendors, a lot of speakers, workshops. It's not just about green. A lot of people think green is limited to environmentalism and stuff. It really has a lot to do with sustainability. People of all opinions and political bent, and anybody can think anything they want, but when it comes to sustainability, there's a lot of common ground. And so there's a lot of green builders up there. There's a lot of there will be some transportation options as far as electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles. There are some educational opportunities as far as people in the educational field and, how they can outreach. There is green jobs, people who are either offering or talking about green jobs. There's organic, local agriculture and organic agriculture people up there. There's, what else we got, renewable energy, solar energy, wind, really just a bunch of stuff. And I'm really looking forward to it. Last year we didn't have an event like that, but prior to that we did have an event, but this one apparently is going to be even bigger, and it's in a better venue. It's in the Civic Center as opposed to the Ag Center, which was a little out of the way and a little more rustic. This is going to be a top-notch show. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I appreciate you posting that because the more the merrier as far as people knowing about it.
Absolutely. And so in Asheville, and so that's going to be awesome, and wish I could attend. I told folks, I think in my post, that I would, it's not too far up the road, which is probably something that we could easily have gone to, but I'll be in a parade this weekend. I promised early on I'd help a chicken group trying to get chickens legalized. They've entered into a parade, and they got about 50 people showing up. We're going to be walking in the parade, and they've got a float and promoting backyard poultry in this county that doesn't allow it. So I'll be fighting for backyard poultry, but it sounds like a really fabulous event, and I wish you well there.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a three day thing, so we have plenty of opportunities to meet and greet, and meet new people. And being Asheville and being the fall season, there's going to be plenty of tourists, and they'll come in. They may just come in to see what's going on, because it's not a very expensive thing. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be awesome. All right, preserving apples. I know it's kind of apple season. I was talking to my neighbor just this week, and we a lot of folks here head up to the kind of the northeast Georgia mountains to the Ellijay area and Blue Ridge every year about this time and start stocking up on fresh Georgia apples. And I know that's kind of tis the season. So couldn't come at a better time as far as kind of preserving them in different ways to preserve them. So we're definitely ready to learn from you.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of going to be a little mixed up here. There's a couple of, as I said, it's a lot of this is just old-time ideas. But then I also wanted to expand a little bit into into a little bit about cider making, and then, of course, the way that cider itself, especially, you know, the kind you make yourself, which isn't doesn't have preservatives, will not keep very well. I mean, you pretty much have to have to drink it pretty quickly, or at least refrigerate it. However, talking about traditional means, making hard cider is, and you know, whether you like it or not, or like the idea or not, that's exactly how people stored well before the time of refrigeration. That's how people stored their apples. Basically, was to turn it into you know, 10% alcohol, and then it would keep for, you know, quite a while. And then, you know, even if you didn't drink it, you could trade it. That's the whole point, and that still works. Ah. That still works today.
Yeah, it does.
And we're not talking, this is not moonshine. This is you know, hard cider, and I'll get into that. That just occurred to me because it's we've had a fair amount of mail about that over the years, and especially this time of year when the apple season is upon us, you know. You know, the county here where we're from, where back home is from, is Henderson County in North Carolina, and it is, I believe it is probably the number one county in all of the state for apple production. I'm pretty sure about that, and I'm also pretty sure that it is the probably the number one money crop for the county. And you know, I work the Extension Service booth every year. We have an apple festival. We've had the apple festival since 1946 or 7, I believe. And I help out with that booth every year. Actually, at the bee section, the beekeeping section, but we share the booth with the apple farmers and some of the other local produce people through the Extension Service. So I should know all this, but I do know that it's a very important part of our local not only heritage but also our local economy, and I think on a national scale even we're pretty high up there. You know, I know New York State has some excellent apple production and Washington State does as well, but we in the mountains here, most of the South, I know Virginia also has some apple production, but most of the South, at least the non-mountainous South, is not really well known for its apples. But when you get into the mountains, you have the climate, the perfect climate and the perfect humidity to allow those seasons to change, which is what makes a good apple, from what I understand. So we've got all that, and so there's, you know, what I don't know about apples, I certainly can find out in about half a second here just by, you know, going down the street or whatever. But anyway, a little bit, and this is something I didn't know about apples. I was just reading some of the articles we've had in the past, and actually in our latest issue, in our current issue, a couple has done a nice article on apple preservation, and I did not know that the apple originally came from, the apple as we know it, the eating apple that we know it, originally came from Kazakhstan in Asia. It is not native to the North America, and it is not native to Europe.
So everybody listening who thought that Johnny Appleseed was the man, just burst your bubble right there.
yeah, no, that was a surprise to me. You know, we have crab apples, of course, and England has crab apples, and other places where people have come from to here in North America have crab apples. But actually, an original or the predecessor of what we know as the eating apple is actually a wild ancestor in the mountains of Kazakhstan. And obviously people have been perfecting the apple, or at least raising heritage breeds for their particular climates for centuries. And there's your Johnny Appleseed right there. You know, as he went westward, distributing seeds and having people, you know, sort of custom tailor the seeds year to year to their own climate and elevation and humidity and whatever. And of course, that's what people used to do, and that's what we're starting to do again, is saving seeds, keeping our heritage seeds, and saving back the better products of our production, whether it's apples or tomatoes or anything. What works well and what does well in your soil, of course, you want to save those seeds for next year to preserve those characteristics. If some people are sort of you know, genetically bent, they may want to combine certain seeds to make a better apple or a better tomato or whatever. But you know, from a non-genetic or genetically modified or a non-chemical sense, the heritage seeds are the ones to use. And yeah, we're starting to collect and use them. And there are organizations, Seed Savers Exchange, and many other regional organizations that that practice and encourage the saving and growing of real seeds as opposed to the genetic hybrids that we buy at the store, which cannot be they're annuals. They cannot be recreate themselves. So so anyway, we're back to the apple here, and the interaction between honeybees and the apple trees that were planted is really what made it work. What made apples really thrive, and you know, mainly starting in New England, and then progressing through the rest of the country. And some in those days, especially before refrigeration, the varieties were mainly sought after for keeping qualities. In other words, if they kept well through the winter, that's really what they wanted. Of course, they could use the not so well keepers for immediate use, pies and ciders and that kind of thing. But they certainly did want to try to save and raise apples that kept well in storage throughout the winter, so they'd have something to carry them through. So that's all the all the basics of the old days, and we can talk a little bit about keeping and drying. And some of the simplest ways is also one of the most decorative ways, and I know people have seen this. You can core, take the apple and cut the cores out of them, or core the apples,
right,
and then slice them in half and thread some string through the centers, and you just let them dry really slowly, and they will you don't want to let them dry too quickly, and you don't want to let them mold in a humid environment where they won't dry. And you know, these days, and of course in the old days too, any kind of cook stove, a range, even a kitchen range now, even doesn't have to be a wood stove, but anything that produces heat on a regular basis and drives off moisture is going to be the ticket as far as letting the apples dry. And many people with wood stoves will do that, especially starting this time of year when you, at least up in the mountains here, maybe some folks are starting to get the stoves ready and wood stoves ready, and maybe it's chilly at night and just make a little fire. So September, middle of September is a little bit early, but some people get chilly easily. So you're harvesting the apples now. You put them on that string and just let them hang over the hearth there, and let them slowly dry on a mild heat. You don't want to put them too close to the heat source. Now one of the other things to do is this is part of the cider making, but it's also a sort of a preservative measure, is to you can mix a little solution of one part lemon juice and three parts water. Just 25% lemon juice and 75% water, and just dip the apples in there to help, maybe won't prevent them, but it'll certainly cut down the browning, the tendency of the apple to brown and just be unsightly. The browning doesn't really hurt anything, but the oxidation does present that sort of unsavory brown. And if you use that solution to just, quickly dip it in and then do the stringing, they'll keep better, and it won't affect the taste, much at all, and they just won't turn brown. So, that's a nice little twist. You can also, for the holidays, you can also apply a little bit of cinnamon or clove or nutmeg or any of the kind of spices to the sliced apples to make them not only decorative, but they also, have a little taste to them. So that's, that was an old-time traditional means of keeping apples longer as they dried, longer into the season, so they wouldn't spoil so quickly. Because apples can tend to do that, as anybody knows. Once you cut the apple, it's usually is
oh
pretty quickly, the drying period might be about anywhere from a few days to up to about 2 weeks, depending on how much you use the stove and how humid the room is. Obviously, the more humid the room is and the cooler it is, the longer it's going to take to dry. If you have a regular fire in there and you have an ongoing heat source, it really wouldn't take but 3 or 4 days to dry those apples right out. Again, it's important not to leave the apples to hang too close to the stove itself, because that'll crisp them up, not so much dry them. You don't want to over dry them or burn them. So that's more or less finding a comfortable level above the stove where they'll work. And a lot of this is experimentation. What you want to do, what you're trying to achieve, is to get the slices to feel leathery and dry, but there has to be a little bit of flexibility to them. It can't be like a potato chip where they're crisp and crack. Like Fruit Loops, they have to be flexible, but completely dry. So that's the end result there, and that's really not that hard to do. And of course, the thinner you slice them, the more easily it will be to achieve that result. With the thinner slices, and they will be able to be bagged and stored like that. The other thing, and like I said, this will be a mix between some of the traditional ways and some of the modern interpretations of that. But one really good tool that people can aim for, if they can't buy it right away, they can save their nickels: food dehydration. And it can be either solar. I mean, of course, we do a lot of solar. Not a lot, but occasionally there's an article we have on solar food dryers or solar dehydrators. But you can also purchase a dehydrator. There's three or four of them on the market. Some of them are round and circular in shape. Some of them are actually square or rectangular boxes with trays in them, just like about the size of a microwave. They do not use a lot of energy. Most commercial ones all use electricity, of course, but they don't necessarily, they're not like ovens or microwaves where they use a considerable amount of electricity. It's really just a heating element or something similar to a light bulb, and perhaps a very small fan in there to get the air circulation going, so that you don't have wet spots within the dryer. And the food dehydrator is just a real good buy, just like a meat grinder or a juicer or something like that. It's a kitchen tool that really, if you use it, really will pay for itself, very, very quickly. Reliable method of drying, and they don't really break down that easily. Some of them have, or the better ones have, humidity controls and timers and all the bells and whistles. So you really just pop the food in there and set it and don't deal with it.
I need to pull mine back out since we moved. It's still packed away, and I really need to get that back. I've got the round kind of tabletop round one with about, I guess, 4 or 5 trays on it. And I guess my question, I know this show isn't about dehydrating by any means, but I always, the instruction booklet's there with some of the basic stuff, but is it possible, my biggest issue with dehydrating is I'm always worried I don't keep it in there long enough. Is there a way to, if I overdo it, it's not going to hurt it. I mean, let's say it's done in 4 hours and I happen to go 6, just to make sure that it's really dehydrated and the job is done, that extra hour or two, is it possible to over dehydrate something? I mean, in one of those tabletop round things?
I don't think it's going to hurt. I mean, it's not over dehydrated. Yes, to answer your question, it is possible, and it's but fortunately, it's not the if it happens, it's not the only effect is in the consistency of the food and the over dryness of it. It's the worst thing. The worst scenario would be to under dry it. Then when you put it up, what you're doing with these dried apples, either way. Whether you're doing them over the stove or doing them in the oven, that's another way of doing it. You can set if you're fortunate enough to have an oven that has a very low setting, in the 95 to 110 degree F setting. Some ovens will do that. Many of them don't work below like 150 or something like that. They really don't. They're not very accurate down there, or they're shut down. Some of them will actually operate on a very, very low drying phase. And you can do on a tray. They do make special aerating trays or screens that you can dry apples and fruit on. You can use your electric range or your gas range to if you can keep the temperature maintained at that, you know, down there at 110 degrees or something. You can do it in a regular oven. But the goal in any of this is to once the apples are dried sufficiently to pack them in an airtight container, and they'll go, you know, they'll go 2 to 3 months like that without you know, without any further attention. Now, if you happen to put them in there and they're not dried enough, what's going to happen is you're going to get mold on them.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pretty obvious, so you wouldn't really be eating. You know, there could be some danger, obviously, if you ate them moldy, but it's obvious when they've reached that. So so you would, you know, prepare to enjoy your apples 2 months later, and you'd open the bag or the container, and they're going to be ruined. So that's, you know, that's the worst that can happen. I would always go for over drying, of course, rather than
right.
under drying. And as I said, a better food dehydrator will be temperature and humidity sensitive, so it will basically, you set it, and so you can't, you know, unless the machine's broken, you it's going to pretty much tell you when it's ready, and they are going to be ready, and that's, you know, that's the whole point.
Right.
They try to make it as convenient as possible.
I had a question in the chat room, and it says, just a second, let me find it. Does your guest, Richard, always use lemon to keep apples from getting brown, or is there something else we could use?
There is something else, and it's not. It asks me what lemon is. Lemon is the one that I've always used. But the there is another powder. What is this stuff? I know somebody in the chat room is going to know what it is, and they'll probably tell
and
me.
And you sprinkle it on it, like a fruit fresh or something
right,
like that.
Right. Right. It's really just a borate or some kind of a. I'd like to say borax, but I don't want to mislead people. But it's a food preservative type of powder, and that will keep it from browning. But the lemon juice is I believe is cheaper, and it's just more common.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and you can squeeze either squeeze the lemon juice yourself, which is probably better, or you could just purchase the bottled juice.
That was my next question. If we had some lemons, would that be a better?
Always. yeah, always better. I mean, you know, first of all, the bottled lemon juice is going to have preservatives in them, and it's not going to be as traditional as a squeezed lemon. Of course, the squeezed lemon is probably going to be more expensive when you get down to it. If you have
right.
lemons and all that, you know, if you can buy in bulk, sometimes around Christmas time we'll have people make runs to Florida or whatever, and they'll bring back boxes of citrus and bags of lemons and stuff, and you can get a pretty cheap per pound price on lemons and oranges and such. If you can get it that way and they'll keep long enough, you can squeeze out you know, quite a bit and use the lemons as you normally would, and you know, we're not really counting the labor and the time because you're supposed to be enjoying yourself. You know? So, you know, with the dried apples, back to the apples, you can eat them as dried slivers or dried fruit, or you can rehydrate them, which is great for making apple pies and apple recipes, you know, stews or any types of some of those, you know, sort of stewy recipes where you mix a lot of different things in, or you can rehydrate them and just use them for in pies and other other types of things like that where you actually want them moist. And to rehydrate them, what you would do is just let them soak in a couple hours in apple cider would be ideal, or in water if that's all you have, and it'll just bring the moisture right back into the slivers, and you can use them in your pies and your cobblers and whatever. So you know, that's really great, and you can freeze. Of course, again, my freezer at home has very little room for what I really want to put in there, which is meat and other stuff like that, and ice and meat, because it's full of blueberries and apple slices. But again, you know, we get the apples so inexpensively here this time of year that it's really ridiculous not to cut them up and freeze them, because, you know, we can go through the whole winter with fresh, basically fresh apples, or at least traditional apples. Without having to buy them at the store, imported from Washington in the middle of January, you know, which is, you know, I just find that ridiculous that we, especially here, we should be importing anything from anywhere in the way of apples. I mean, it's all right here. We have 20, 25 plus varieties growing right within, you know, bicycling distance of me anyway. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's right here. So, you know, basically a frozen apple is just an ideal, you know, ideal way to just keep them through for whatever you need them for through the winter. Let me see.
I was going to say, of course, we can't forget the my favorite way of preserving apples, and that is putting them in an apple pie and eating them immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Apple crisp, apple pie, apple muffins, apple.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we have this, as I said, we have this huge apple festival here in the county every year about Labor Day, and we have several of the vendors there have a continual supply of apple pie slices for sale at the booths, you know, and they're just absolutely delicious, fresh. You know, they make them fresh that, you know, that day before or whatever and bring them in. And, you know, there's not any one particular supplier. I mean, a couple of people just sell them at their different booths. And between that and, the cobblers and the different apple-related beverages and, you know, just the apples. I mean, having working at the apple booth or the county booth there for the extension service, I mean, there's always people handing around apples for taste this one, try that one. And, in fact, we do have a – you know, you don't have to, I mean, we do buy them, but you don't have to. You can pretty much, you know, if you stood there long enough, people put them in your hands, you know. But we actually have a taste test among quite a few. These are not all local people either. There are quite a few visitors from all over the eastern seaboard come for this thing. And we set up a little taste board, maybe about 8 different varieties, and you get to taste slices.
And when is this?
It's usually Labor Day. I mean, so that okay. weekend, it's passed. I mean, it just happened.
Oh.
It's September 1st, more or less. I mean, it's always around that weekend.
Right.
And it's a 4-day festival, culminating in a big apple parade. But very, you know, thousands and thousands of people come, and it's really, really good. And what in this taste test, what they do is they get, you know, free apple samples and try about 8 different apples, but you have to fill out a poll form. So, you know, they have a couple of parameters, you know, how is it crisp? How does it taste? Is it sweet enough? Bitter? You know, all the different things that they find important in marketing of an apple. And at the end of the line, after you've sampled your 8 apples, you fill out the paper and you know, they make sure you know which one was what. And you don't have to do all 8 of them, but you just have to fill out what you thought about each one you ate. And they collect all these, and it's really an important tool for the next year's marketing, so they basically know what to grow. I mean, if people absolutely mm-hmm. dislike a certain type of apple and there's no real market for it, there's really no point in bringing it back next year. And then, you know, they will try to adjust their – the farmers will try to adjust their crop to suit, you know, both our growing abilities and the taste needs of customers. So, you know – and there's all sorts of customers, not just eating apples, but there's juice apples and pulp apples and just all sorts of stuff. So, you know, it's a pretty thorough economy here as far as apples go.
I just posted in the chat room about all these different apple things, and people are going crazy with recipes in the chat room and all these different things that they love to make with homemade applesauce. And I had put down there in all capital letters, apple butter on fresh homemade biscuits.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like apple butter on? And so that's another way to preserve, making that apple butter, say, in a crock pot, canning it, and then you're good to go sitting on the shelf.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And any kind of – actually, I'm going to go through a little – what they call
great.
A red pippin here. Okay. But that's exactly another way of doing it. Apple jellies and preserves, you know, excellent way to put them up and keep them good for, you know, for quite a while in a jar. But here's one that that actually goes back to the 17th century. So that'd be the 1630s, I think, is what she's saying here. But it's called the red pippin preserve, and that's basically an apple. The pippin is a sweet eating apple, and it is used as the basis for this some of this recipe here, which I'll go through. It's a very sweet apple, so, and it turns red during the cooking. It actually takes on a red tint, so it's a nice they call it jewel-like, so that sounds, you know, sounds interesting anyway. And some of these recipes actually in the article here, she's quoting it, it's basically a variation of an article that was published in 1604 in a cookbook called Lady Eleanor Fetteplace's Recipe Book. 1604. So,
wow.
So basically, some of this stuff really carries on, and this is a traditional thing that's really kept its, you know, kept its popularity for all these years. Let me see. I'm trying to go through some of this stuff. Is basically talking about making it in the bread oven and cooking along with the bread, and then letting it dry in the heat of the oven once the cooking is stopped. But let me see here. We'll start with the recipe here. You are starting with 5 small ripe apples, and then, you know, you may not be able to get the red pippins, but I'm sure it wouldn't hurt to try any small eating apple. 4 ounces of rose water and 1 pound of sugar. So you want to peel the apples, leave them in their entirety, leave them whole, but take the skin off them and the stem and such. And put them into a heavy casserole dish, and add the rose water over the apples, and then add half of the sugar. So you're putting in 1/2 pound of sugar out of the whole pound, and then you want to cook in the oven at 350 for about 40 minutes. Let it cook about 40 minutes in the oven, uncovered, I believe. It doesn't say anything about covering it. Let me see. And then you, at the end of the 40-minute cooking period at 350 degrees, you'll remove it and add the remaining sugar, and then just let the whole mess just soak up heat in a slow heat situation. That could be on top of a wood stove. It's not burning
uh-huh.
the whole heat, or in the oven after it's been shut off, just letting it, you know, open the door, just let it what they call dying heat, just let it soak up the heat in that situation for several hours. Now, if obviously when you turn the oven off, it's not going to maintain its dying heat for 6 hours, but the point is to just let it mellow, let this mixture mellow with the full amount of sugar for about 6 hours in heat at a much lower temperature than you would, you know, cook things. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, 160, 100, and, you know, 150 degrees, just that very low temperature. And once that's soaked through for the heat is soaked in for the 6 hour period, you can sterilize your canning jars and put them in there for putting them up. Put the syrup and the apples in the jars for putting them up, or just let them cool completely, and then you can just eat them on the spot. So, you know, they're just a really good dessert type, you know, preparation there for mixing with. You can mix it with creams and, you know, ice cream, whatever you want to do. It's just a real nice traditional recipe that really doesn't use a lot of heat for very long. It's only a 40-minute cook, and then just a real slow dry. So that's one good old, very old time recipe. And the other one I'm looking at here is a apple pie recipe, which actually uses onions in it. And I don't know how that's gonna. I actually didn't really look at this in detail before, but it happens to be here, so I can go over the recipe here. Sounds pretty interesting. This one goes back to 1747, and,
wow.
And this is a recipe book written by a woman named Hannah Glossy. And she apparently was pretty popular in her day, and she's basically writing for the cook staff of people who had obviously had help in their houses in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So she apparently was pretty well detailed, and it was not very difficult. You know, it was at a nice level of understanding, so everybody could, you know, get it straight. The point of the, it has a little note here. The point of the exercise was that the recipes were presented so the lady of the house didn't have to spend time teaching her cook staff how to cook. You know, it'd be nice to have that problem these days, wouldn't it?
Yes.
So we have something called an onion pie, but it's actually an apple pie. So either whether it's an onion pie that uses apples in it or whether it's an apple pie that uses onions in it, it doesn't matter. It uses both apples and onions. So you take two small apples. It doesn't really specify what, but I assume any kind of pie apple would be fine. Two small potatoes, and this sounds interesting. I would use the red type. This is just my having done things like this before with potatoes. I prefer either the Yukons or the red skinned red Pontiacs or whether other types of varieties, the smaller red skinned apples. A medium sized onion, two hard boiled eggs, 13-ounce pie crust, and a couple 2 ounces of butter, and then just some seasonings, mace, nutmeg, and black pepper and salt, 1/8 teaspoon of ground mace, 1/8 teaspoon nutmeg, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, all ground, and 1/4 teaspoon salt. And you want to preheat the oven to 350, like traditional pies. Slice the apples thin and the potatoes thin, the onion thin, and the eggs thin, like you'd be making potato salad, or at least when I do it, I cut it thin, the eggs thin. And you combine all the spices in one cup and prepare a 1.5-pint pie dish, which is actually a nine-inch pie dish. The people who are presenting this are actually English, so it's sometimes we have to make conversions for people. So that's a 9-inch pie dish, and just put the pie crust in there, and set aside enough to cover the pie for the top, and butter the bottom of the crust. And then alternate layers of apple, potato, onion, and egg slices. Between each of the layers, you want to sprinkle some of that spice that was mixed up, the spice mix in the cup, and just pile it up till it's finished, and then seal the pie with the crust, and brush it with milk or egg, make your slits, and stick it in the oven for 1 hour at 350. And you have four nicely sized slices when you're done after an hour. So that's a traditional recipe that sounds very interesting. Between the potatoes, the apples, and the onions, sounds like a meal to me.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's that actually comes to us, as I said, from some British people I'm not really sure where they're from in England, but it's a traditional English recipe that it works very well across the pond here as well. So, we tend to do that a lot. We have been distributing the magazine more and more in Australia and New Zealand and in the UK, so we're getting back contributions from people who are seeing stuff over there. So it always makes for an interesting mix. And
a listener in the chat room asked, "Now, do you actually spray the pie with mace once it's finished baking?"
you first.
Oh my goodness, you jokers!
You grind it first, then you.
Oh, my goodness. Fun jokers in the chat room. Now, tell me, I can remember, I think I was making, Jen, what was it I was making? Was it my pot pie, iron skillet pot pie, or apple pie, where it said to coat the bottom crust with butter, and that was for a particular reason? Do you remember we were reading about that, and it said something about coating the... Do you know, Richard, because I remember I was reading a recipe or something, or I was watching something. Maybe it was it... Food Network, we were watching, sitting in the hotel room somewhere.
And
I think it's, yeah.
I didn't follow the coating part.
I think it said put the bottom crust with butter. Didn't it say something like that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
To prevent something or to...
Well, you're pre-greasing the bottom of the pie crust, the dish, and then you're putting the crust on top of that, and then you're putting the butter on top of the crust. So you can prepare the pan first. I mean, you don't want the pie to stick to the pan. So that's that's basically the first one. Some people use Crisco. I mean, it's lard. I mean, it's just depending. A lot of times in things when I do, I'm not really, I shouldn't say I'm a knowledgeable baker, but when I do it, I use cornmeal. I use yellow cornmeal to like making pizzas. So the pie, the bottom of the pizza doesn't stick to the metal. Pan, I use a flat slab of metal pan, or sometimes I have a glazed, like a huge Fiesta ware you know, big dish, and then just stick a little yellow cornmeal on there, sprinkled around, just keeps it from, it raises it off the surface just a little bit, not only to let the heat up in there and, you know, get a good heat transfer, but also so it doesn't stick. So, you know, it's just basically just lining or greasing or preparing the bottom of the glass pie dish so that you don't have the crust stick in it. That's all.
Okay, gotcha.
It's just so it doesn't stick. That's all. And it makes it a lot easier.
Very cool.
And some people, you know, you can look at that. You hear people say, oh, this is a great recipe, and what makes it taste so good, and blah, 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 and it's all because you're using things like, you know, lard in there, just some of the really good stuff, like real butter and lard, and then when people, especially people who are more conscious about health and whatever, hear that, then they want it to taste just as good, but they want it to be healthy, too, and that's sort of difficult. I mean, you can come close, but you can't always duplicate it, so, you know, there are some limits to this, you know. I use a lot of olive oil in my cooking, which is about as close as you're going to get because it's healthy, but it tastes pretty good as a substitute for butter. So that works pretty well. And some types of these, like Smart Balance and some types of these butter substitutes really are as close as you're going to get to butter without having the risk of the cholesterol. So, you know, that's
now, we learned on one of your shows that olive oil, however, is not the ideal oil for frying
because of the
heat tolerance or something like that. I remember you on one of your previous shows.
Yeah, and that's essentially the difference between the difference between extra virgin olive oil and just the regular olive oil. The regular olive oil will tolerate the heat more so. The extra virgin will burn and just not will not be good to that's good as a dressing and whatever, but so if you're talking about applying heat or especially in a baking situation, the regular old cheaper bulk olive oil is what you're talking about. But even that, when you're talking about bringing it to a temperature of frying, where you're talking about the frying level higher than the baking level, it does not do well as a frying oil because it doesn't tolerate the heat temperatures. And there's sources online for, I don't have it in front of me, but there are sources online for all the common oils and at which temperatures they turn and burn. And that's good to know because you can pick out the three or four of them that actually work pretty well as frying oils, which ones don't. And you know, all this carries forward even into fuels. I mean, as we use some of these oils for diesel fuel, actually, and some of them work really well as diesel fuel because they will tolerate temperature and they don't get thick when they get cold. And there's a lot of different characteristics. So they also select people who use them use the oil in engines also select characteristics just like you would for cooking. So you know, it's always an interesting little factoid there. It's sort of interesting to know. I was going to get on into the hard cider because that's about the only other thing I can get into for storage. Now we talked about freezing, and we talked about a little bit about canning. Of course, the canning of the putting up of the apples are basically a canning process, and that one red pippin one is actually good for that, but as I said, you can freeze them, you can can them, you can string them up and dry them, you can dehydrate them in an oven or a dehydrator, and then you can also do it the old fashioned way, which is of course not all the apple 100% of the apple harvest wasn't turned into hard cider, but they'd set aside a certain amount of it for barter. For consumption and barter, and turning apples and other crops into a storable liquid is basically, people think of moonshine and think of revenueers and all that whole thing, but it is not. I mean, that's true. All that is true. But the point is, these people in those days were not expressly doing this for alcohol consumption. They were far more of them were doing it for barter than for consumption, because that's the only way they could keep their produce, especially in the mountains. Like most of the problems in those days took place in western Pennsylvania or in these mountains here in western North Carolina, and you know, southwestern Virginia and eastern Tennessee and northeast Georgia. And that's because in those days it was very difficult to get your crop. It was very expensive and very difficult to get your crop down to the markets where they would, you know, be sold, or for people coming up here to buy stuff from you and to go all the way back home. It just didn't happen that way. So what would happen is that people would turn their corn and their apple and their, you know, potatoes, whatever, into a liquid, a storable liquid, which basically is a liquor of some type, a beverage, and put it in jars or canisters of some type, and cart them down the mountain to be sold or bartered, at the regular markets, and they could carry them much more easily and much more densely, more money per pound as liquid than they could by piling a wagon full of corn ears or whatever, and of course that's what got everybody in trouble with the federal government, was because the federal government expects tax to be paid on that, and most people who had gone through all that effort were not about to pay tax on that. That's part of their, you know, that's their dollar, you know, essentially. In those days that was a dollar to them. It wasn't just a beverage. So that's where all that trouble came from. But anyway, talking about cider, basically taking a particular type of variety of apple, for example, ones that are known for their characteristics, in which the final blend would be really a desirable cider. Some of these types are Red Delicious, Yellow Delicious. Some people mix. There's a variety called Jonathan, which actually is pretty popular. They're mixing for if you do mix them, you're mixing them for not just sweetness, but for fragrance. You know, the smell of a cider, for, especially at the holiday season, is a real desirable part of the deal. And so, you know, these types I just mentioned, and I'm sure some other types, other varieties, and maybe regionally that other people may have. In New England, I know there's going to be other types that people have traditionally made cider out of. And why I'm saying cider now is because you really start by making cider, and then you can actually turn it into hard cider, which I'll describe in a minute. But we're making cider first, and basically, choosing your varieties carefully is going to be what makes the good cider to begin with. The point is to wash the apples, you know, to begin with, and then basically putting them through a press. Now, if people are going to be traditional, they're going to need to either build or buy an apple press or a fruit press. And that, you know, you've seen all these. They're usually the wooden. They're little miniature barrels with usually two or three metal straps around them, and the staves of the barrel, the wooden part of the barrel, are vertical strips of wood, up and down strips of wood, and there's, you know, like make basically the size of a large bucket, and this thing sits in a metal stand, and there's a press, there's a big screw at the top with a handle, and a plunger kind of thing, and as you screw that screw down, it just squishes. It pushes down that plunger and just squishes the apples in the bucket into a mush or a mash, and the juice flows out, and that's essentially how it's been done traditionally. But you can, we happen to sell a plan, a building plan to make an apple cider press. But you modern day people, you don't have to go to that trouble. You can also just put it in a juicer. You know, a lot of people find it's easier just to core the apples and shove them in a juicer and just. You know, that'll do it right there, and you've got your juice, your juice ready made, and either way you're just looking for the juice, and essentially it does take a while to get the juice out of it, but you'll actually get more juice out of it by taking your time with it than by trying to use force to squish it all out at once. You do have to use pressure on it, but just letting it come out over time is going to give you a better delivery of juice than trying to force it all out all at once. Basically, you can send it through a cheesecloth. You want to squish it through a cheesecloth so it actually filters the any residue out and the pulp out, and you just get the juice through. So it's a fairly clear, clear juice. Now the thing with the cider and the juice itself is that it does spoil pretty quickly. So it has to be either cooled immediately. Well, basically, you siphon it first, basically putting it into a container, and then instead of pouring the container, which will pull the residue along with it, what people will do is actually take a tube, a food-grade siphon tube, and just put that in the container above the bottom. You don't want it to touch the bottom of the container. You want it to come up from the bottom a bit so it doesn't pull off the residue, and just siphon off the top part or the liquid part, and then you put it in your containers and just let it cool. Put it in the refrigerator in gallon jugs or growlers, half gallon jugs, right after it's pressed, and then you can store it, that way for a few weeks. It'll keep without any preservative in it, a couple weeks anyway. Also, the people don't realize it'll last. They say about a week. Fresh cider is about a week in the refrigerator, but I have had it for a couple weeks up to that point. You can also freeze cider. It's important to realize that. You can actually freeze the liquid cider, and it will last frozen for up to about a year that way, as long as it doesn't unfreeze again if you don't have a power outage or leave it out accidentally while you're moving things around the freezer. But a lot of people don't realize that cider can be frozen that way, and that's another way. Certainly not traditional, but another way of storing your apple product as juice for up to a year, and you can use it as juice for a lot of things. So, and that's the other thing, you can store your apple. The pomace can even be stored that way for a while, or you can just throw it in the garden as compost, and it'll break down the soil quite nicely, and it's a good amenity to the soil. There's really no point in wasting it. You're just using it, reusing it in a different way in your garden. So that's that's good. But now to make the hard cider, basically you just go through the whole deal with making cider. But then at the point at which you're at the point of turning it, siphoning it off, what you want to do is actually then introduce yeast into the mix. Now what you'll need for this is to get containers, either gallon or half gallon containers that are completely clean, and you'll need to get some airlocks. And anybody who makes beer or wine knows what an airlock is. It's a device that plugs into the top of the growler or the gallon container, and it's like a big cork with a water trap in it, and it lets gas and bubbles out, but there's a water trap in it, so it doesn't let air back in. And that's critical. You have to be able to let the product bubble out, but not let the air back in, or else it'll bacteria within the air are going to affect the apple cider in there. It's going to spoil it and turn it to vinegar. So essentially, what we're doing here is taking your apple juice with the residue in it. It doesn't really have to be completely filtered to make good hard cider, and you are going to warm it. I'll say you better prepare your bottles first. There's stuff called Beer Bright or the same substance that you can get in the grocery store that people sterilize baby bottles with. People who still do that. It's just a really good cleansing product that makes those bottles and all your equipment completely clean and free of bacteria. Some people use a very weak mixture of Clorox, but I don't want to recommend that because I it's different in every situation how much to use. So you don't really want to be ingesting hypochlorite. So I won't, Clorox will work, but it's not necessarily the best way to do it. The brand name products are called Beer Bright, and there's other comparative products that you can get in beer making and wine making stores, or the kind of stuff you use for making sterilizing baby bottles. Anyway, these bottles have to be absolutely clean. Your cooking containers have to be clean. Your spoons, your siphoning equipment, all that has to be clean. Once that's established, then you take your cider, and there may be some residue in it, and you warm it. You do not want to really boil it at all, because that will kill bacteria that's actually helpful to the taste and helpful to the process. So you don't want to boil it. You just want to warm it to the point at which the yeast will not be killed in it, because if you make the water too hot and don't let it make the cider too hot and don't let it cool enough, it will kill the yeast when you put the yeast in. So you want to bring that cider temperature up in an absolutely clean vessel, like a stainless steel, well, maybe not stainless steel, but some people use crocks or some other glass container or something like that. So try to avoid copper. Stainless steel would be okay, but copper and aluminum are not really desirable. You want to bring that up to a temperature of maybe 120 degrees, but then absolutely let it cool down to the temperature at which your yeast is going to survive, and that will be apparent with when you purchase the yeast. Now, the kind of yeast you want to get is not bread yeast, because that imparts or brings the taste, that yeasty taste, into the cider. You really don't want that. What you want to get is a dry wine yeast or an ale yeast. And again, these are kind of things you can either get online or get at your local, if you're fortunate enough to have a beer or wine brewing store in your area, you can get it from them. But there's a couple of wine yeast that work really well, and there's a couple of ale yeast that also are quite temperature tolerant. That's the one you want. They do not impart, they don't bring that taste of yeast into the beverage, but they also can tolerate quite a bit higher temperature, or a little bit higher temperature than what normal yeast would. So that will be clear on the package or by the person who sells it to you. They'll tell you what the temperature range is. So what you would do then is to heat that cider, as I said, bring the temperature down to wherever the yeast is comfortable, and then ideally you'd pre-mix a little bit of the yeast and the cider to make a little starter to kick off the brew, and then introduce that into the warm cider, and then mix it up a little bit, and then add the rest of the yeast, and then let it work, and then you would then be bottling it and preparing it with the air traps so that you'll allow the yeast to work. And what the yeast is doing is consuming the sugars in the cider and giving off carbon dioxide, which is the bubbles and alcohol. That's all that's happening, is that yeast is producing basically two byproducts, or actually three. And part of it is heat, and the other two that we're really concerned with is the carbon dioxide, which bubbles off, and the alcohol, which is what's being actually produced. And that alcohol will impart itself into the cider, and it'll basically come in a range of, you know, somewhere between 8 and possibly up to 13% or so. And and then after that's all done, you've got your hard cider, and that'll keep for quite a while as hard cider, if it's bottled, you know, capped and bottled correctly, and there's no bacteria in it. And you'll find out immediately if bacteria got in, because it's going to be a bitter vinegar. It either works or it doesn't work. And you know, if any bacteria got in there that shouldn't be, either from a dirty vessel, a dirty bottle, or air getting in there somehow, it's going to turn it to a sour, acidic product, which is basically vinegar. And so better luck next time. Other people will add things. If you want to make a sweeter cider, if you want to have a more higher alcohol content for preserving, preservative purposes in there, you can add some sugar. Some people add honey for a little more kick, you know, whatever. But there's a lot of recipes in there, a lot of recipes out there for making hard cider. But that's essentially the basics of it, and that's, you know, another way to preserve that those apples in liquid form over the through the winter. And that's very traditional in itself.
Super. And how long would that last once we do this?
Well, I'm just saying for the sake of, especially people who have done it before, I'm saying through the winter. But I know I have had apple jack, if you call it that, or hard cider that has been considerably bottled and aged considerably longer than that. Because just like wine, I mean, it'll stay for quite a while if it's bottled correctly. So but essentially, for purposes of just talking without actually conducting a seminar, I'm, you know, saying through the, basically it's keeping it through the cold season, and, you know, then you, you know, then you have it.
Great.
Yeah.
Very
so,
cool.
You know, that's a whole, that's really a whole nother avenue or path of which, you know, it's really sort of hard to explain it, but I myself am going to, if I'm fortunate enough to get in, there's a local class this coming week, our local, one of our local brewers, actually there's a local brewery and there's a local winemaker, and the winemaker's holding a instructional evening class on winemaking, so I'm going to go pop in there and see what's the problem with my blueberry wine that I'm presently making, so, which I think I know the problem. It's been poisoned by bad bacteria, so I have some, probably have 2 gallons of excellent vinegar right now, you know.
Oh, me. Hopefully you can figure it out and see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, no, you know, I'm pretty sure I got it. I got what's wrong with it, so we'll figure it out. But so that's about it. I don't really have a whole much,
good.
A whole much, lot more to add.
Well, that's perfectly fine. That was an hour, and that was perfect timing. And I know you've got to get a pack in and getting everything situated for the big event coming up here this weekend in Asheville. So we'll let you go. We thank you so much for coming on. Before you go, though, tell all our listeners how they can subscribe to your awesome publication, Back Home Magazine. If you enjoy, folks, what you hear on the second and fourth Thursdays here with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, then you'll absolutely love his publication, Back Home Magazine, and you can subscribe to that. Well,
yeah.
Worth it. Great reading. Tell us how we can do that.
Okay, well, the easiest way is to get on the website, backhomemagazine.com, and there's a couple of different windows or buttons at the top. Subscribe to Back Home is the one you want, and you can drop that down, and it'll tell you 1, 2, and 3 year subscriptions. You can buy sample issues if that's all you want, or you can do a little mini two issue trial sub, just a very inexpensive little trial fee if you like it. The other way to do is you can call us toll free at no expense to you. It's 800-992-2546, and you'll get a real live person here in the office. We don't sub out our calls to Pakistan or any other place. It's right here in the mountains of North Carolina. You get somebody here to talk to and place your order, talk about the subscription or whatever else you want. Or you can just write to us here at the office. It's Back Home, P.O. Box 70 in Hendersonville, North Carolina, 28793.
Great.
So that's it.
That is perfect. And, of course, backhomemagazine.com. So, perfect. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you here in a couple of more weeks, and hope you have a great time this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. We'll. If anybody has come in late, we will be at the Southern Green Living Expo in Asheville, North Carolina, all weekend for this big event. And, you know, it's a great renewable energy and sustainable living expo that we have co-sponsored actually for this year, and I hope it goes real well. So we'll see. Anyone who wants to come is welcome to come up there and spend the weekend at Asheville.
Sounds like a plan, and a beautiful time of the year there as well, so it'll be well worth your time. Richard, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, my friend.
Okay, good deal. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Snap-lock chicken coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer. That segment with Richard Frubenberger, publisher of Backcomb Magazine, all about preserving apples using old-timey techniques. Guess what? That segment was brought to you by NatureWise, natural poultry feeds by Nutrina. They're all-natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. You can learn more about their products at NutrinaNatureWise.com. Got that? Write it down. NutrinaNatureWise.com. Today's segment was brought to you by Nutrina. So, and a great segment it was, and we thank you very much for tuning in. Tomorrow, of course, is Friday. In fact, as I get back over here to the chat room, it actually looks like somebody in the chat room is ready for Christmas. Doing. Somebody in the chat room said the magic word, so gotta love it. So, hey, tomorrow is Fun Friday. We've got a load of great prizes to give away. We've got some Happy Hen Treats from Randall Berkey. We've got some Chunky Chicken Caviar from My Pet Chicken. We've got a brooder kit from Critter Cages, critter-cages.com. We got gift certificates from Brincy, gift certificate from Stromberg's, gift certificate from Solar Night Eyes. let's see, gift certificate, I'm sure to somebody else. We've got an awesome gift from McMurray Hatchery tomorrow. Let's see, we all probably have a Hen Saver hen apron to give away from Crazy K Farm. We'll have either a supplemental water for inside the coop or maybe a wire egg basket from Ware Manufacturing. Another $15 gift certificate to critter-cages.com. All kinds of great prizes. Now, I can't guarantee tomorrow we'll get through all of them because it is a travel day for me and my family. We will, at this point, unless something changes, I'll keep you updated on Facebook. Right now, it looks like we will be broadcasting live tomorrow. 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'll be a fun Friday segment, so we're really looking forward to that, but it may just be from 12 to 1. I think what we'll do is we'll start the show immediately. It won't have a lot of host chat, and then we'll get right into giving away some prizes. I'll try, if I can, and have some time today to look up some type of trivia questions to have a little fun with, of course, tomorrow. Versus just having you call and win, we'll maybe have some type of trivia game tomorrow. So that'll be fun. So we hope to do that tomorrow. So if there's any reason why there won't be a show, I will let you know. If they need us up there to get ready for parade or something early tomorrow, then I'll let you guys know. But right now, it looks like we will have a fun Friday episode tomorrow. And real quick, remember again, I told you earlier, next week, Monday, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Tuesday, Andrew Odom, tinyrevolution.us. Wednesday, GardenWise Living with Arlena. Thursday, Dr. McRae, PhD, Poultry Scientist. And then another fun Friday next Friday, the 21st. And, of course, you can continue this fun. You can continue this fun on our Facebook page at, of course, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer and Twitter. If you're on Twitter, then you can find us there at Backyard Poultry on Twitter. So very cool there. So thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it. We hope to see you tomorrow. And all the contests, the coop contests for October, all of that will be all that information on how to enter. Of course, we'll have the password collection password collection for poultry protection in October. And we'll have another one that'll be fun as well. So we'll see how all that pans out. But all that information will be announced before October the 1st. So we appreciate you joining us today. We hope you had a great time. Thanks for listening, all of our new listeners, archive listeners, over-the-road truck drivers, homeschoolers, and our feed and seed stores that stream the show live. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you all tomorrow for Fun Friday right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So long, everybody.